Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Today is Friday, June 24th, 2022. Let's take a quick preview of our docket. First, Brian Laundrie. Well, his diary slash confession has been released. Oh, this little case called Roe v. Wade was reversed. Paul Pelosi got charged with that DUI. A little street justice in the courtroom. Wait till you see this video. Todd and Julie Chrisley. They're awaiting their sentencing. And this is an example of an actual hero. And then dumb criminals of the day. That's right. The dumb criminal of the day with all the previous dumb criminals throughout the week. Let's talk about it. All right, aficionados, let's get to it. Let's open the docket. First, Brian Laundrie. That's right. The guy who we all know killed Gabby Petito on or about August 28th of last year. Well, as we recall, FBI searched and discovered her remains in the Bridger-Teton National Forest back on September 19th of last year. Investigators ruled her death a homicide by manual strangulation and blunt force trauma to the head and neck. Well, Brian Laundrie then returned to his parents' home in Northport, Florida, about September 1st, citing a license plate reader recorder of the van rolling into town. That's the way the police were able to know that's where he was headed. Now, according to the FBI, he also sent fake text messages from Petito's phone in a bid to cover up the crime and stole her credit card. Now, the Laundries went camping on a beach at the Fort DeSoto Park south of St. Petersburg and said nothing of Petito's disappearance publicly. Then on September 11th, Petito's mother, Nicole Schmidt, reported her missing to police in her hometown of Long Island, New York. They contacted Northport police, who knocked on the Laundrie's door, where they met silence. On September 13th, Brian Laundrie snuck out into the swamp despite hidden surveillance cameras set up around his house, and this was the last time he was seen alive. Now, his family later voluntarily turned over the family's gun to the FBI and said one might be missing. Investigators did find a revolver near Brian's skeletal remains in the swamp when his body was located. So what is the news today after that quick little recap? Like I said, they found that Brian Laundrie took his own life, and they found some articles that were probably in the swamp but yet still being able to be protected because of the bags that they were in. For some 5 weeks while Brian Laundrie's body remained in the Makahatchee Creek Environmental Park there in Florida. Well, in that little notebook, Laundrie wrote that he killed Petito after he claimed she injured herself when she fell in Wyoming. He also wrote, "From the moment I decided, took away her pain, I knew I couldn't go on without her." Now, attorneys representing the Petito, Schmidt, and Laundrie families met at the FBI's Tampa's field office today, and news organizations have obtained copies of the notes scrawled by Laundrie before he took his own life. So really what it boils down to is, yep, he confessed. He did what everybody would expect to find in those particular documents. Well, since he took his own life after he was under investigation for murder and tried to get away with it. That's called consciousness of guilt. There was no doubt in my mind once it turned out to be a suicide. I still thought maybe he had a chance that he had escaped the country, but apparently not. He screwed that up too. All right. Oh, yeah. So, by the way, I guess there was a big decision from the Supreme Court yesterday. Kind of like there was a big decision yesterday from the Supreme Court regarding the Second Amendment. But based upon the few number of people that watched the video, it would appear is that most people don't care about all the real legal stuff. And when I condense down a 63-page opinion into a well-summarized, perfectly articulated summary, people said, stop, it's too much, I can't take it. Well, yes, ladies and gentlemen, that's what lawyers really do. They read and they write a lot. And a 63-page opinion like yesterday, that's what lawyers do. That's what separates the non-lawyers from the lawyers. Well, guess what? The Supreme Court overruled again today a case that has been basically precedent for roughly 50 years. That's right. That's the Roe v. Wade decision. And that decision came out this morning, and it upheld Mississippi's restrictive 15-week abortion ban. Now, the decision said that the Constitution does not confer a right to abortion. Roe and Casey versus Pennsylvania Reproductive, I think is what it's called, are overruled, and the authority to regulate abortion is returned to the people and their elective representatives. Now, just like yesterday, some people could be upset and say, oh my gosh, why can't they regulate guns? Well, because guns are a fundamental right. They're specifically mentioned in the Constitution. Now, a lot of people are going to say, this has been precedent for 50 years. And some people would say, I'm summarizing now a very lengthy opinion for you all, that basically says, nowhere in the Constitution will you find the word abortion. So how can you have a right on something that doesn't exist, is not mentioned in the Constitution? Well, because they made it up. The court, when they wrote Roe v. Wade, said that it was the right of an abortion was in the penumbra of the Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment due process type of situation. It doesn't exist. They made it up. I remember being in constitutional law class, and the professor said it was the worst decision ever written because it made it up. Even Ruth Bader Ginsburg said there were problems in the analysis under Roe v. Wade. And for years now, people have been trying to say that Roe is the law of the land, and other people have been trying to get it reversed. Well, now it's gone. The power is now returned to the states. So individual states can decide whether they want to allow abortions, restrict them, or have none at all. The people get to decide. Needless to say, tensions are running high since the draft opinion of the Dobbs decision was leaked last month and showed that the high court's conservative majority was poised to push whether abortion was legal back to the states. Now, the 6-3 majority made good on what the draft said, with liberal justices Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Stephen Breyer dissenting. Chief Justice John Roberts concurred. Conservative Justices Brett Kavanaugh, Clarence Thomas also filed concurring opinions. Now, abortion was basically, for lack of a better term, outlawed in at least 18 states as soon as Roe v. Wade was overturned. And that's because there were some places that had trigger laws and historical bans that were automatically reenacted after today's ruling. So, for example, if a state had a law in the books from the early 1900s that said obtaining an abortion was a felony, then the legislature never repealed that law. Guess what? It's now active law again. So once again, the legislature, usually the instigators of bad laws, whether it's Congress or these state houses, have to go back and fix things, which isn't necessarily a bad thing at all. They just hopefully try to get it right and not do political things and do legal things. All right. Now, 13 states prepared what they refer to as trigger laws, which would automatically outlaw terminations in the event of a ruling under if Roe v. Wade were to be reversed, which was pretty much anticipated. Those states are Arkansas, Idaho, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, and Wyoming. Eight other states are set to enact new anti-abortion laws. Georgia, Iowa, and South Carolina all attempted to ban abortion after the six-week mark. Those laws were branded unconstitutional, but will likely be revisited now that Roe ended. And Florida, Indiana, Montana, as well as Nebraska are all working on plans to ban or restrict terminations. As you may recall, Roe said you had to have an abortion within the first trimester. Some states now say that you can have an abortion up until basically birth. Most people, I think, supported the fact. I think the polls show 2/3 supported termination earlier in the proceedings, but that was based upon science that went back some 50 years. So if you're going to look at the science, it may actually state that a viable fetus may be much younger than previously expected. Needless to say, it is back to the states. Now, something of note, Clarence Thomas, obviously a conservative justice on the court, said that, hey, you know what? The same rationale that we used, or the court used, to decide Roe v. Wade could be considered to reconsider such things as gay marriage and birth control. Now, Justice Thomas wrote that the court should reconsider other cases that fall under the court's previous due process precedent, which includes ruling to establish LGBTQ and contraceptive rights. In future cases, we should reconsider all of these courts' substantive due process precedent, including Griswold, Lawrence, and Obergefell. The 74-year-old justice was referring to the 1965 ruling of Griswold v. Connecticut that allowed married couples to have access to birth control. He also referenced the 2003 ruling, Lawrence v. Texas, that forbids states from outlawing consensual gay sex, and Obergefell v. Hodges, a 2015 decision that established the right to same-sex marriage. Substantive due process refers to the notion that people have fundamental rights that aren't specifically established in the Constitution. Obviously, the conservative justices these days are reading everything rather literally, and it says, this is what's in the document. This is what the document says. This is what the document means. You can't add words to it. You can't take away from it. And under the same thing as, like I mentioned before, some people will argue, just like the word abortion is not in the Constitution, neither is gay marriage. I doubt the Founding Fathers probably ever even considered gay marriage. Just going on a limb here. But there's a remedy to all this. Instead of the court making up what things they exist, there's a remedy to that. It's called amend the Constitution, which we've done numerous times over the course of our country. And if people want to have it made an amendment, then those things can be added to an amendment. The problem seems to be when the court says that a right exists that cannot specifically be found anywhere in the law, it seems to create a lot of angst for a lot of people. But if maybe people have a right to vote on it and consider it, there'll be much greater acceptance. Bottom line is, that's the courts, ladies and gentlemen. I've always said, if you want justice, don't go to the courts. Remember, if you like the video, hit that like button, subscribe if you haven't done so already, and leave me a comment and hit the bell so that you get notifications when we go live or put up a new video. Hopefully that wasn't too in detail that people got bored, but well, that's really what lawyers do, is get into the nitty-gritty and argue about the meanings of words or the lack thereof. And that's what creates litigation. All right. Speaking of people that their spouses create lots of words and laws, that's right. Nancy Pelosi, her husband, Paul, remember him? He's been charged with DUI by prosecutors in Napa County after he crashed his car last month. That's right, his Porsche, brand new one. His blood alcohol level was a 0.082, just above that 0.080 limit. And yes, that's right. Paul, who's 82, doesn't get a pass because he's 82, but he allegedly left the dinner party on May 28th and was driving a short distance home, like many people do, thinking, I'll just get home. It's only a couple of blocks. What could possibly go wrong? Well, Paul was driving, like I said, his Porsche, and he pulled out into traffic in the path of a man driving a Jeep. Neither the driver was injured, thank goodness, but photos from the scene showed that the vehicle crashed into a wooden fence. Paul was arrested that night and was released on bail, which was set at $5,000. He was released the next morning. Obviously, what we're all interested in is if the district attorney is going to release the body cam video. Won't that be interesting? And as the press always likes to note, Nancy was not with Paul. She was back in the East Coast giving a commencement speech. So therefore, make clear, she was not the one that got the DUI. And hey, let's give Paul the presumption of innocence. As far as I can tell, he made it 82 years without getting in trouble with the law. He can probably go another 82 years. It can happen to anybody on a first. All right, next on the docket, a little street justice in the courtroom. So Deshaun Brown, accused of murdering 25-year-old Natasha Lattimore and putting her son Nilo into the Ohio River, still alive, was punched by the little boy's father during a procedural hearing. Now, during a hearing, Antonio Hughes leapt at Brown, punching him repeatedly in the head and neck before he was held down by officers. Now, officers in the court handcuffed Hughes and helped him to get on his feet, but he again lunged at Brown. Four officers were needed to hold Hughes down. Hughes was taken out of the courtroom by police. Hughes was charged with contempt of court and has been ordered to serve 7 days in the Hamilton County Justice Center. See, when you do a little street justice, you also get a little contempt justice, and you could go to jail. He's not been charged with anything else, but obviously he could be charged with assault or attempted assault, but the disruption in the courtroom, that's direct contempt. Now, Brown is charged with two counts of murder and one count of felonious assault, gross abuse of corpse, and tampering with evidence, and he is accused of murdering his then-girlfriend, Natasha Lattimore, and putting her three-year-old son, Nilo, into the Ohio River while she was still alive in December of 2020. Nilo's body has not been recovered. And earlier this month, the Cincinnati police detective told the judge it appears Natasha was pregnant with Brown's child, but had a miscarriage. Detectives believe that Brown killed her and Nilo out of retaliation for the miscarriage. If found guilty, Brown can face the death penalty. And what do you think, you know, the guy that was there to punch Mr. Brown? Wouldn't you like to see those two put in the same cell at night? I know it's not going to happen, but wouldn't you like to see that? Wouldn't you like to see the video? It'd be like a good movie script, wouldn't it? Got to take care of it. In court, you can't do street justice. Remember that, ladies and gentlemen. All right, remember, you can listen to Crime Talk anytime on the go by listening to us on your favorite podcasting app. That includes Audible, iHeart, Apple, and Spotify. Go download us. I'm telling you, our numbers have gone up so big on the podcast part of this that it's great. We're getting close to 1 million downloads. It may not sound like a lot because I know some people get, you know, Joe Rogan gets what, 4 million a day or something like that. But when you consider about the number of podcasts that are out there, and most people get on average about 10 downloads, which usually is their family members and coworkers, we're doing pretty well. All right, Todd and Julie Chrisley, guess what? They are waiting for their sentence. And they're asking their fans for their thoughts and prayers in the wake of the recent conviction for bank fraud and tax evasion. And Todd specifically asks fans to stop spending their hard-earned money on flower arrangements and gifts and instead keep the couples in their prayers or send money for the tax fraud restitution. You could do that. Now, Todd, who's currently on house arrest, made the request on this latest episode of Chrisley's Confessions podcast. Julie can be heard saying, "Amen," agreeing with him that although the gifts left on the front porch are appreciated, they're not necessary. Todd and Julie are hiding out in their Nashville mansion while he awaits sentencing, obviously found guilty of a list of charges. Chrisley's lawyer said that they do a plan to appeal the verdict. They don't need flowers. They don't need gifts. They need hard cash. The government's coming for their hard cash. If you're going to help them, send the cash. It's always about the money, ladies and gentlemen. It's always about the money. Okay, let's talk about a hero. Employees at the Chipper Truck Cafe in Yonkers, New York, found a jumbled message on a Grubhub order. It basically said, "Please call the police. Don't make it obvious." Now, the order came in around 5 a.m. on Sunday for an Irish breakfast sandwich and a cheeseburger. Alicia Bermejo, the cafe's owner's daughter, and another employee were working that shift and called Bermejo's father. Alice told police that her father told them, "Let's call the police. We can't take any risk or chance." So police responded to the address of the Grubhub customer and found a 24-year-old woman who was being held against her will and also being sexually assaulted. Kamoy Royal was arrested and charged with rape, unlawful imprisonment, and other counts, and he was linked to an unrelated sexual assault the day before. He's currently in custody on a $200,000 bond. That is a true hero. Well, a few days later, Grubhub called the cafe and told the Bermejos they were given a gift of $5,000 as a reward for what they have done. Now, the Bermejos said the money would be definitely come in handy, but that mostly they were grateful that this guy has been caught and that the young woman is going to be okay. Seriously, they could have just ignored that entire situation. My hat's off to the Bermejo family. That is absolutely, that's their hero stuff. Seriously. All right, finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Quick recap of the contestants throughout the week. And be sure to leave a comment voting for the dumb criminal so that, you know, we can kind of announce a winner. So Monday, we had Benny Martinez. He was dancing naked on top of a police cruiser by Hollywood's Walk of Fame in Los Angeles. People do anything to get attention. Tuesday, hundreds of teenagers broke into an $8 million home and threw a giant party, then posted all the evidence on social media. And I told you the other day, the homeowners are upset and they want everybody prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Pictures, pictures, pictures. Gets them every time. Wednesday, Bryce Francis was arrested for using the drive-through where he would, where he worked to distribute methamphetamines. It's been tried before, never works. Thursday, Jeremiah James Taylor broke into a sheriff's station in Colorado and stole a car. He then proceeded to respond to a domestic violence call, this stole a police car, and then impersonated a deputy, and went on a high-speed chase as well. Today, we have 52-year-old Wayne Talman was caught on camera trying to allegedly attack Vermont state troopers with an excavator who were arresting his son, Brandon Talman, for an alleged assault last week. The father was also then arrested and charged with aggravated assault on a protective official, resisting arrest, impeding, and reckless endangerment. Brandon's mother, Amy Talman, was also issued a citation for impeding an officer. All right, let's go ahead and close the docket. Hope you enjoyed the docket today. We want to thank you for watching. Have a wonderful weekend. Watch our weekend recap. And a big shout out, that's right, Julie, the member of our staff. She's leaving to go learn to fly and be a professional pilot. Although it sucks that she's leaving, we wish her well and we're excited for her future. Go Julie. All right. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.